Straight in front of them, the sun was sinking in a blaze of scarlet fire, tongues of flame spreading halfway across the sky.
"At least we're heading the right way," Feathertail murmured.
"Yes, but how far do we still have to go?" Brambleclaw had tried not to share his doubts, but his anxiety was becoming too much for him.
"The sun-drowned place could still be days away."
"I always said this was a mouse-brained idea," Crowpaw remarks, though he sounded too tired to be aggressive.
"Well, how long do we carry on?" asked Stormfur. As all the other cats turned to look at him, he went on. "If we don't find the place, sooner or later we have to decide. Do we give up or keep trying?" Brambleclaw knew he was right. At some point, they might have to admit defeat. But what would that mean for their clans? To ignore the will of StarClan and go home with the journey unfinished? Then Squirrelpaw, who had been facing into the wind to drink in the scent it carried, spun around to face the others, her eyes blazing with excitement.
"Brambleclaw," she gasped, "I can smell salt!"
Spencer Grant, and you're listening to Four Trees, a Warrior Cats community podcast. Last week, I was joined by my best and closest friend in the entire world, Alex Turner, to discuss the book Midnight. We talked about cat linguistics and about StarClan and about the plot of the book and how kind of silly everything is. So if you're interested in that discussion and you haven't heard it already, I would suggest listening to that one before listening to this one, just so you may have a better idea of what we're on about and catch any jokes or references we started in the previous episode. Please remember that these are usually going to be two-part episodes. So the first part episode is probably going to be a discussion, like we're going to be recapping the book, and the second part will probably be a little bit more silly just in the future. That seems to be the nature of these conversations now that we've had, like, what, three of them? So, yeah, this is Four Trees. Spencer, okay, stop talking, get to the interview. I'm sorry, Midnight is a ghost?
Yeah, sorry, I sent you that.
Oh my god! I love these books.
There's so many questions. None of this is talked about in the book. She's as old as time.
And she's also a ghost.
And a ghost.
That's beautiful.
It's so interesting. If she's as old as time, you'd think that she'd take the time to get better.
Also, the detailed description of her basically contradicts itself constantly.
What do you mean? What does it say?
Midnight is a huge, bulky female badger with small, round, very bright, beady black eyes. Very bright and black.
I mean, maybe it's like bright as in like... I don't think that it's like bright as in like physically bright. It could be like bright as in, you know, how you would... describe somebody.
I suppose.
As being right.
She has broad, heavy shoulders, a broad white stripe running down her face, a wide head, and broad, flat, massive, heavy paws. But her muzzle is narrow. So how is her muzzle narrow if she has a wide head?
That's a good question.
Very, very odd and pointed. Her face has a long, striped nose, which she has thick fur and broad, muscular limbs. Yeah. Midnight is an ancient being who is a spirit but can appear physically in the living world.
Good for her, man. Good for her. I think Midnight was probably the least interesting. Not to say that Midnight isn't interesting in her own right, but I was a little bit more concerned about the magic sisters.
Yeah.
I forgot about that plot point, and I thought I missed that plot point until later. Mm. Well, it was basically the fact that like Leafpaw and Squirrelpaw have some kind of one-way telepathy, which I understand like the idea of saying like, oh, these two are twins. They can understand when one thing is wrong with the other without needing any cue other than, you know, their presence. Because like that makes sense. You know, well, I am a sibling to people. I have certain implicit understandings towards my siblings in ways that I cannot really express.
And I suspect a lot of people feel the same way about their siblings as well. They just might not choose to use quite as pretentious vernacular to describe it. So when it comes down to like that, I get, and I'm like cool with it. I do like, I'm not sure how I feel about the fact that leaf paw can bite on a root and squirrel paw will wake up the next day tasting it. Like, I like that it's, I guess, obscure enough that like in the real world, nobody would be able to tell. But also like it's I don't know, the part about it that I like the most was this notion that leaf paw sometimes was unable to discern between her own thoughts and experiences and those of squirrel paws, because I'm like, oh yeah, she's tuning into those distant stations, I understand.
Yeah,
but the rest of it I'm like, yeah. So yeah, magic does exist in this cat world, even though it is for the most part the same as our human world.
Yeah,
and it's that's the thing that you have to, heaven is real but only for cats, and in particular only for the cats that have this particular belief system, although apparently there are other groups of cats that have their own belief systems that also have their own heavens. So like there's a you might have noticed, had you actually read the book, that Midnight says something about a tribe.
I mean, I read most of the book.
It was at the end though, so I know you didn't get to that part. Midnight says something about how their tribe cats, and then she's like, "No wait, sorry, you're from clans. My bad."
Ooh.
And yeah, that's right.
Is that going to be something to do with the Scottish bit?
Yeah, that's right. There are Scottish cats. They show up in full force. It's really interesting actually, because like for the most part,
do they wear kilts?
That's what I was going to say. Like the most part, all of the cats in these books have like more or less plausible colorations, or like colorations that are plausible enough that like unless you were to draw out Punnett squares, you wouldn't be like, something's odd about that. But then like that all basically goes out the window as soon as the Scottish cats are introduced, because their like fur is tartan.
What?
Yeah.
Scotland has native cats.
Yeah. But their fur is like plaid. What? And that's just how they're born. It's really interesting.
Oh, because the Scottish wildcat is an actual cat, which is, it's like a little bit like a Maine Coon, it's a big winter cat.
How do you feel about the protagonist in this book?
In what way?
Do you like him?
Not really.
You don't like Brambleclaw?
He seems, I don't know, he doesn't seem to have much of a personality.
That's fair.
From what I got from him.
How do you feel about the way that he like interacts with all the other cats around him?
I thought it was weird that he seemed attracted, I can't remember what it was, which cat it was. Mm-hmm. He seemed attracted to a cat who was significantly younger than him, and it seemed a little bit pedophilic.
So, yeah, he does like have a weird thing going on with Squirrel Paw.
I was going to say, is that Squirrel Paw? I couldn't remember.
Basically, like throughout the entire book, they're antagonizing each other, and then towards the end of the book, he starts describing how she smells, which is basically like the tell of warrior cats.
Well, I don't think I got that far, it was quite, there were bits where he was saying that he missed her when she was gone. So I was like, oh, it's definitely setting something up.
I don't know, like it's been long enough since I've read the books that I don't know how I feel about their relationship. I don't remember how it actually plays out, fortunately. But like the way that I from what I read in this one, I'm like a little bit dubious about whether it'll actually be good. It's like, I don't know, like they seem fine. I'm like, If they stay like this forever and they only just like continue antagonizing each other and they never declare a relationship of any kind, then like that's cool, because like I can respect the idea that people who don't like each other or people who do not on the surface level get along can like maintain some kind of comradeship in terms of we were in film school, we dealt with people we didn't like all the time.
I don't know what you're talking about.
But I also like, I kind of don't like that dynamic. For start, you're right, the age difference does make it weird. But like also just the way that he treats her isn't that fun.
Also, they talk about becoming an adult at like 4 moons old, which is 4 months, right?
So first of all, a moon is a month or 28 days.
I see.
And you become an apprentice at 6 moons old. And then you basically stay an apprentice for like, I don't know, anywhere between 3 months and like a year and change or something like that. Like it really depends, generally speaking. But an apprentice
cats can live for like 26 years.
They can, but they often don't.
Yeah.
Because these are outdoor cats, for starters. So like in this series, like if a cat lives to be 8, they're basically old.
That seems inaccurate though.
I mean, they are outdoor cats.
Yeah, but outdoor cats can and do live much longer than that.
Also, they're like constantly having race wars.
That's true. Yeah, they are literally race wars.
Yeah, it's really weird.
Are there cat Nazis?
So there were cat fascists in the last one. I
think it's catists.
Yeah, I would say like it's hard to use the term Nazi in reference to these books because that comes with a lot of like cultural and historical baggage associated with it. But like I would definitely use the word fascist without question. When Tiger Star was in charge, he basically annexed River Clan and started systematically killing and imprisoning all of the half clan cats.
Yeah.
Which does seem like a major fascist move to me.
I wouldn't
say Nazis, but I would only say that out of like deference for people who would like to see that term used. I would say appropriately.
That's fair.
In regards to human fascists in America and abroad who are arguing for unequal and inequitable rights for mankind. I would say within the context of cats. Nah, it's fine. I think these are discussions that we should have. If you want me to edit it out later, that's okay. I think that these are like discussions that we should be having in reference to these books, because a lot of times, whether they know it or not, the books touch upon some like kind of important subjects that should probably be thought about in a little bit more context. I would really love to have like an actual like religious scholar on the show at one point to talk about Star Clan. I feel like that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that is actually a good idea.
The way that they get recontextualized from religion to faction and so on throughout.
I don't think you could class it necessarily as a religion because it's not really theology.
Yeah, I guess at this point.
There's no God.
It's ancestor worship is what it is.
Yeah, it is ancestral worship.
I guess there isn't like a pantheon, but I would call it a religion just for the sake of like.
Wait a second.
Yeah, go for it.
My mic just fell off.
So yeah, I think I'd call it a religion. They don't have a pantheon, but I don't think that excludes something from being a religion. That would, I guess, be a question to talk to a religious scholar about. So,
I'm not saying it isn't a religion, but it's not a religion in necessarily like the typical Western.
I suppose. Yeah, that's a good point.
Sense, which, considering it's a very Westernized book, is it written by an English person or an American person, or by lots of people?
Like three or four English.
Yeah, so it's written by people coming from a monotheistic culture.
Yeah. This is literally a Christian nation.
It is. We don't have separation of religion and state. We have the opposite.
It's fun.
Which is fun, yeah.
Yeah. Star Clan, like, being characters and not a religion, I think is, like, an interesting thing. Because one of the things that I think these books lack is, like, an objective voice of reason in a lot of cases. Especially now that, like, Firestar has basically been demoted to a background character. We don't have We don't have like a character who is like a wise mentor or anything. The closest we have are Star Clan, who have stopped being an omnipotent, overseer and started being characters in their own right with their own like limitations and agenda to push.
I would imagine it is inevitable within this arc that one of the main characters will become the head of Star Clan, not Star Clan, of Thunder Clan, because that's just how it works in this sort of book.
You think that Firestar is going to die? He was the protagonist of the last six books.
It would make sense.
All right.
Well, that's fair. He's either going to die or he's going to disagree with something and leave.
Okay.
And I reckon either Brambleclaw or Squirrelpaw will become the next leader.
Pretty freaking great if Squirrelpaw got to be the next leader. I would really like that, honestly.
Can confirm.
I would say she's probably the most interesting character in this book.
Okay.
Huh?
Okay.
Do you disagree?
I find her annoying in the book. That's a little bit.
She is a literal child in this case.
It is, yeah, that she is a child, and it can be grating.
It's really when she has that like paw prefix. Mm. Yeah, it's kind of difficult to dissociate the fact that she is a child, which is probably a big part of why the whole thing about Brambleclaw is so uncomfortable. That they're like trying to set up a romance there. Because, like, she is a paw. She doesn't have claws yet. Leave her alone.
Yeah.
Let her be a kid and think about kid stuff, like Pokemon and cartoons, Dragon Ball Z. I don't know. Whatever kids think about these days. Fortnite? I bet Squirrel Paw is great at Fortnite.
Yeah.
I think without, like, a voice of reason or anything, these books have to kind of default for the voice of reason and objective, like, truth-ometer to be the protagonist, which I don't really
isn't necessarily a good choice.
Yeah, like it can work if
an interesting protagonist isn't necessarily one who always makes the right decisions.
Yeah,
and you need to be able to tell they're not the right decisions by having a perspective other than the protagonist to look through.
Absolutely, I think when Firepaw, like, they talked about this a little bit, like when the trouble that Firestar got up to back when he was a kid, where he used to be like he would when RiverClan's territory was like screwed up, he would go and catch prey for them. And you got a really interesting, like, two sides from that, because the people who were mad at him, like Blue Star, was like, we have to feed our own clan first. Obviously, you were doing something compassionate, and that was very kind of you. But also, it's life or death in this forest, and you have put another clan's life before our own. And that isn't something that I'm comfortable with. And that was, you know, you got to see that argument as well as Firestar's argument of these cats shouldn't be punished while we thrive idea. And that's like cool. And I really like that. But again, like you said, in absentia of an actual of another thing, we have to default to whatever the protagonist is thinking. And the protagonist doesn't have anybody else around him to tell him that he's wrong. Or not anybody that we can, like, trust, I guess. Like, the only person who says, hey, Brambleclaw, I don't like the ideas that you have, is Crowpaw, who is also a child and has been basically written to be grating as humanly possible until he gets tired enough to stop questioning everything that Brambleclaw does.
Yeah. Does it always start out as Kit, Paul, Claw, Star? Or is it slightly different for
different
cats?
It depends on, like, where they're born. This is, like, another fun cat linguistics thing. Basically, the leader is the one who chooses all of the names for, like, the full-grown cats, but the mom gets to choose the names as the babies.
For
the clan cats, it will always start off as Kit, and then they become apprentices, and they become Paw, and then depending on the leader, they might get different names. So, like, some of the leaders were really creative. In one of the books that we read recently, there were, like, a bunch of, like, really out-there names, like Moonflower, and Sunfall, and Goose Feather, and, like, Rain Whisker, and Otter Splash, and, you know, Heavy Step. And then when, you know, Blue Star, in the last book, like, a bunch of the other cats had really, honestly, generic-sounding names, like Brackenfur, and, you know, Bramble Claw, and Tiger Claw, Lion Claw. Like, it's a, it's another interesting thing.
And yet none of them was called Piss Whisker.
None of them were called Piss Whisker, which I think is a major oversight, and it is one that we will correct after our sixth season.
And a movie, yeah.
But, so that's, like, also, like, it gives a leader an opportunity to, like, kind of be a jerk. It happened in one of the previous books. Actually, like, in the last book we read for this show, there was a thing where Blue Star, the character who becomes Blue Star, is talking about how mean it was for the leader to name another cat One Eye after the fact that her eye was, like, lost.
Oh.
And then later on, in a later book, after she becomes Blue Star, she names a cat from Bright Paw to Lost Face after her face is ripped apart by the dogs that Tiger Star lured into the forest.
Oh, yeah, it's not the person who's at the beginning. I think she's mentioned at the beginning of the book.
Yes, that was
this book. Yeah.
And then later on, only after Firestar becomes leader, he renames her to Brightheart because of her fighting spirit and her perseverance, clinging to life.
Yeah.
It's honestly, like,
really that incredible. Actually, no, that was a specific question I had about her. They say that she has learned techniques to be as deadly as any other cat despite her disadvantages.
Yeah.
Why doesn't every other cat learn those techniques and then be even more deadly?
So I think that was, like, the idea eventually. They, like, started... First of all, I don't know that techniques work like Dragon Ball power levels where you can just, like, continue adding on more. I think the idea is that Brightheart can use those because she's, like, you know, without her eye and without that ear, she has, like, a special way of keeping in tune with those. But they do actually end up teaching those techniques and similar techniques to the other cats around so that they can have them. I think they just serve a different purpose for Brightheart, and also to some extent, I think if the other cats were to, like, overuse them, then it would give the cats from the other clans that they were to fight would probably, like, notice, like, oh, they're using these techniques a lot, let's come up with counterattacks, and suddenly Brightheart would have lost her edge.
Okay,
you know.
Yeah,
so that's a thing to think about. But I do kind of like the idea, actually, the more I think about it, of these cats becoming more and more powerful as they go along. I can't wait until the part, if you, I don't know, if you, do you plan on reading any more of these books at any point?
No.
Okay. If you decide to come back on the podcast,
unless you ask me to return.
Let me tell you then. I don't want to spoil too much for any new readers, but there is a scene later on when Brambleclaw finally unlocks his Super Saiyan mode, and all of his fur turns golden and he starts glowing, and it's like really good.
Are you joking?
Yes, I am joking.
Okay, good.
At no point.
I couldn't tell because these books don't seem to have any logical consistency with what happens in them.
I was
from what you said so far.
When I was talking about the tartan cats too, actually. And I was
wait, were you?
Yeah, and I realized that you believed it, and I'm like, oh crap, how do I get
yeah
back
because
on
why
this?
Wouldn't I why wouldn't I believe you were like, oh, they'd been really good about it until now. I was like, oh okay.
Yeah, I guess with the talking badger, like a lot of your suspension of disbelief, like the level
yeah
raises.
there's a talking badger who's a ghost who's as old as the universe. Of course they have tartan cats.
It's an interesting direction for them to go in, honestly. But I don't know if I'd prefer it if they decided to keep it like stringently realistic, you know?
Yeah.
Like, how would they deal with a world in which you know, the forest is being destroyed had StarClan not, you know, suddenly elevated to being a real thing with actual powers?
Yeah.
Like, that could be interesting in its own right. But
I mean, I'm still suspicious of the fact that they are intending to destroy the New Forest to build a road.
You don't, I mean, maybe it's like a segment of the New Forest. You have to... Here's the thing, Alex. You read this book. You know how dumb these cats are.
Yeah, they're dumb. But, like, they could just move... Like, it's such a big place. It's full of wild horses. People don't know how many wild horses there are. Also, there is a distinct lack of wild horses.
There were some horses.
Were there?
Yeah, they ran into some at
but
the
were they?
At the
but
farm.
Were they wild?
No, they yeah, weren't they were, wild in this book. They
yeah,
were
that's what I mean.
Meant to be not wild.
Okay.
There was actually a segment that I did clip from... because I wanted to talk a little bit about Crowpaw being a jerk. Where Brambleclaw sees these horses and he's like, wow, that's crazy. So it's literally like they're setting it up like he's telling a joke. It says, quote, I guess even two legs want four legs sometimes, unquote, he joked. Enter, Crowpaw shrugged, and then they move on. And I love that idea of Crowpaw being like, not funny, didn't laugh. Like I kind of adore him, even though he is a brat. I think if there is any cat in the world to, like... You know what he reminds me of? And I don't have a reason for him to remind me of this person. Crowpaw reminds me of Guy Fieri.
Why?
I'm not entirely sure, to be honest. I feel like Guy Fieri has a very strong energy about him. And I would say Guy Fieri is, like, a very positive person, generally speaking. Like, I really like Guy Fieri. I like a lot about what he does. I love, you know, him going around officiating gay weddings and stuff, and being a proponent and messiah of Flavortown. I don't know what it is about Crowpaw that makes me think about Guy Fieri.
No, I don't see it, but...
Maybe it's because, like, if Crowpaw were a human, he would... definitely be the kind of person to have a goatee and wear a shirt with flames on it.
That's fair. Just like
yeah.
me.
Yeah. How is your goatee doing, by the way? Because I know you shaved recently.
It's back in full
right.
form.
I'm glad to hear that.
If anything, longer than before. It's reached its full 6 feet.
That's beautiful. Have you been dyeing it?
Yes, I have. Bright green.
Good.
Yeah.
I'm never sure how to feel about goatees. Cause like,
they're awful almost always.
Yeah, I think
apart from
conceptually, they're like fine. Realistic. Like if I ever see a goatee in like a cartoon or something, I'm like, that's cool. If
yeah.
I ever see one in real life, I'm like, oh my God, are you okay? Do you want help? I always feel bad for it. But like I don't know any other way to interpret a goatee as a cry for help. Like even if you have one of the special ones or like the ones that are like shaved in a funny way, like with Doctor Strange or what's his name? Iron Man from Iron Man.
That's who I was thinking of a good example of a
yeah
goatee.
Because like, I mean, I think Robert Downey Jr. he needs a little bit of help insofar as jawline goes, but like not that much because he has a makeup department
no.
behind him.
Well, even like when he was younger in things like, what was it? Not Good Morning Vietnam, the other film. That you might not have seen. Is it Air America? It might be Air America.
I do not know much about Robert.
It's a very good film.
And does he have a goatee in it?
No, he does not, but I'd say he is more attractive.
He's got a very pronounced chin. Oh, yeah. How do you feel about Leafpaw's crush on Mothwing?
On Mothwing?
Yeah.
Wait a second.
So, like, did you notice that every time Mothwing was described in this book, she was startlingly beautiful? And that is a direct quote.
I did not notice that.
I think that perhaps the character Leafpaw has a crush on Mothwing.
I was not aware of that. Is that the same person as Mothwhisker?
No, I don't know if Mothwhisker is a character.
No, that's Battle of the Clans, apparently.
Battle of the Clans. Okay. If you're looking at the wiki, I can't help you. I have to stay away from the wiki, partially because I'm worried it'll bias me to some extent.
Oh, okay. I'm trying to look up about... No, I definitely didn't notice that.
All right, that's fair.
Maybe that there was a crush.
It was too subtle.
See, I picked up on the thing with Skrillpaw.
Well, yeah, but before, that's like a hetero romance, so that's not subtle at all.
It is, yeah, that's fair. Because I just assumed because they hated each other that they'd end up together.
Yeah.
Because that's almost always how it works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Children's media. That's basically how it worked out with Firestar and his wife in the last book. Or rather, he spent like 4 books ignoring her, and she got mad enough that she basically proposed. Which I kind of...
Wow.
I liked in its own way. It was really... These books don't have a very like good model for how relationships work. I would say probably the best relationship in the last book we read, Blue Star's Prophecy, she ends up abandoning the rules of her clan and having a relationship with a cat that she has met twice.
What?
Because she just can't stop thinking about him. Like, I think this is...
It seems to promote very toxic relationships, these books.
Oh, you'd think, right? Like, I don't know, if you were to interpret it the way I do, as like this early sapient within a species that has to cohabitate with humans against their will, I would assume that like a lot of the really dumb decisions in warriors come down to pheromones.
Yeah, that's understandable. So they just need one of those plug-in pheromone sprays.
Yeah, I think if you take into account these books with pheromones, a lot more makes sense. Hey, why didn't this character like X character, even though they were better for them? Oh, pheromones, man.
Pheromones, yeah. That makes sense, actually. It explains a lot. I was surprised that they had a name for cats who were owned by people and that name was Kitty Pet.
I think
that's a stupid name.
I think to some extent, apparently the cats can understand the two-leg talk or upwalker talk or
crossstroke
talk, depending on where you're from. I also kind of love the touch that each cat has like a different way of calling things and that it's, you know, whatever. But it is implied at some points that the cats can, if they spend enough time, understand what the two legs are saying to an extent.
Yeah.
When the dogs showed up in the previous arc, one of the cats was like, oh, I know what they're saying. They're saying that they're looking for something. Sorry, I couldn't quite catch everything else or something like that.
Is my understanding correct that, what's his name? Is it Firestar? Did he used to be a cat? Like, not a cat, a house cat?
Firestar was, in fact, somebody's expensive designer kitten that ran away after 6 months to go be in the forest and start Race Wars.
I see.
That was, like, the whole thing of the first book, first arc, was that, like, can a kitty pet be president? And the answer is yes.
I see. See, that's clever, though, because that's a way of introducing...
Yeah.
People to it from the perspective of a character who doesn't understand what's going on.
Yeah, I agree.
And then you understand at the same rate. Whereas when I'm thrown into this book and I have no idea at all what anything is going on, then I just don't.
I will say, in defense of HarperCollins, I don't think most people would start at the second arc. But also,
yeah, that's fair.
Also, like if you ever see this book like in the real world, it will have a 1 next to it. Which I think could be pretty confusing if people don't know that, hey, the prophecies
begin. Yeah,
it's
the first one. And it says the New Warriors, which, like, the New Warriors sounds like it could just be a series that you'd be expected to start from.
Yeah, I would say it is not as beginner-friendly as I assumed it was.
Yeah.
Most of the time, these books will, like, at the very beginning have, like, a little... There is the, like, allegiances, which doesn't tell you anything, but, like, within the first 2 chapters, they usually, like, go over the events of the last book in relation to each character.
They mentioned something about dogs. That was about it, I think, really.
Well, that's all you really need to know about the first arc.
There was there was a little bit of hand-holding, mm-hmm. So I picked up on some stuff, but it really wasn't... It wasn't much. Yeah,
I assume
it is interesting.
Be more hand-holdy, but yeah, that's... Mm. I wonder if that'll like pick up in the next arc or something.
Is this the same author as the previous arc?
So there are multiple authors working on this.
Yeah,
series.
But for this, is it the same for each arc? Is each arc done by one author?
Each arc is done by the same collection.
Okay.
So like they'll have.
Is it the same collection who did the first arc?
Yes, I think so. I think they might have added like one other author in midway through or something like that. I don't know enough about the history of these books to. I should look into that.
Yeah, it's worth noting because it would explain inconsistencies in tone and plot.
Yeah. If only I could go to a wiki or fan collation of all of this that wasn't vandalized by people being upset about fictional cats. So, okay.
Are they still making these books? Are these books still being released? Sorry,
yes,
I just read something.
There is a new book that came out a few months ago called Greystripe's Vow that took place both several years in the future and a few months in the past of this book. And then there is another book coming out soon that's a continuation of the seventh series. And then also there are some mangas planned and some other stuff for the future. So yeah, this is a franchise.
Okay then.
I think we're going to have to wrap this up soon. So I'm going to ask
a few more questions.
First of all, Alex, you are a sound designer.
I am a sound designer.
How would you say that your history with Warrior Cats has influenced you and the direction that you've taken with your life?
I think it's had a big influence on me.
Yeah.
I think in the future, going forward, I will be adding more cat sounds.
Okay.
Into my work.
Like the Mario
hiding them.
The Mario Paint cat like MIDI sound, or do you mean like actually?
I'm gonna get a cat and I'm gonna make sounds with it. Take that how you will.
I figured you'd use it as a tambourine.
I mean, it's not off the table. Okay. I'll certainly consider it. Yeah. So I think it's had a big effect on my life, and I don't think I'll ever look at the world the same way.
All right, that's wonderful to hear. Do you have any projects that you would like to pimp or advertise before the end?
Oh,
any bands you're in?
Like the I'm not in any bands.
Perhaps?
Oh, I am in the Arts of Monkeys. That's correct. Yeah, sorry, I forgot.
That's fair.
Yeah, it's me, Alex Turner from the Arts of Monkeys. No, I don't have any projects. I'm a big proponent of soup. So drink some soup.
Okay, I'll pass it along. This episode was sponsored by soup. Drink
and
it up.
And cereal, as we all know, is soup.
Oh, are we? We're not getting into this again, please. We're adults now. It's been 3 years.
That is going to do it for this week's episode of Four Trees, and it does, in fact, conclude the interview that we had with my dear, beloved friend, Alex Turner. So, Alex, thank you so much for being on the show. I really do appreciate it. I would like to, once again, reiterate that this was recorded before Moon Kitty's video came out in regards to the Bramble Claw squirrel paw thing. So we didn't really have any conception of that. We didn't watch the video before starting this. And I still haven't watched the video because I want to be conscientious of spoilers. I don't believe that like spoilers are a be-all and all. This will ruin media for me if I know anything about it. But like I do think that it would be a nice idea to, at the very least, remain somewhat spoiler-free through my journey through this book. And these series in general. So, no, we haven't seen the Moon Kitty thing, but I get the gist of what it is about because I do have friends who have watched it and have been able to provide me a pretty concise idea of what I'm looking at, and I promise that we will be keeping our eyes out peeled for that kind of thing in the future so we can come to our own conclusions, think a little bit more about it, and then eventually agree with Moon Kitty because she's usually right about everything. So yeah, that's been this week's episode of Four Trees. I think I've said that already, but I don't particularly care. I'm staring at a sparrow that's hopping around on the ground outside of my window, and it makes me think about some beautiful things in life and, you know, the fragility of it all. Don't you ever think about that sometimes? I do. I think about it constantly. So, oh golly, I've lost my train of thought. All right, well, thank you so much for listening to Four Trees, our Warrior Cats community podcast. I have been your host, Spencer Grant, in case you couldn't tell, and I'd like to thank our guest, Alex Turner, for joining us for the last little while. You have been an absolute pleasure to have. Four Trees is recorded live in front of a studio audience at Druids Hollow Studios here in Bristol. Our theme was composed and performed by Spencer Chopin Grant and mixed by Alex Turner. Our graphics and 3D assets were designed by Spencer Diablo Grant, and our editor is Spencer Pagliacci Granta. The Warrior Cat series is written by Aaron Hunter and distributed by HarperCollins, if you can believe that. Please support the official release. You can find us at the web at spencergrant.co.uk/fourtrees or at anchor.fm/fortrees, and you can find our YouTube uploads with auto-generated subtitles and audio visualizations on my YouTube channel, Spencer Grant. Again, our podcast is available and will continue to be available on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Music, and generally wherever you get your podcasts. Again, I have been Spencer. You have been beautiful. Bye!